You're listening to the Speaking Tongues podcast. I'm your host, El Charisse. Each week, I sit down to a conversation with multilinguals where we discuss and celebrate language, life, and culture through our own perspectives.
Episode 54, Speaking Japanese and Spanish.
Hello, language lovers. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Speaking Tongues, the podcast and conversation with multilinguals. This week, I'm chatting with my guest Errol, aka Morenita Mami, about Japanese and Spanish. I loved this conversation, and Errol and I talked for hours and hours. She's such a fantastic storyteller. We talked about her growing up in Houston, Texas, and how the Japanese language came into her life. She also tells about learning Japanese in school and how her mom was so supportive of her ambitions with the language. Errol tells us about going to Japan for the first time and how that experience brought some unexpected challenges and how she was able to navigate them, including getting lost in Japan, life with her host's family, and dealing with meeting people in Tokyo. She also tells how she began learning and speaking Spanish with her husband and her young son back here in the U.S. What I truly enjoy about talking with Errol is how she places importance on talking about race and blackness in language learning. I think that black language learners are underrepresented in the language community, and we often don't have ways to talk about the issues that we face and the parts of ourselves and our community that matter to us in other languages. To this end, Errol has written a fantastic book called Melon Intro to Language, a guide to help those of us raising children bilingual and integrating vocabulary about race and blackness into Japanese and Spanish conversations. This book is so helpful for anyone looking to talk about race in their language learning, and her book is available for purchase through the link in the show notes. Big thank you to Errol for this conversation and for telling your story and sharing your journey through Japanese and Spanish with us. I will be setting up a Patreon soon with extras that didn't make it into final conversations, so stay tuned for that because parts of this episode will be on that Patreon because Errol and I talked about so much more than what you'll hear in this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the Speaking Tongues podcast on Apple Podcasts so that other language lovers like ourselves can find the show. And if you're a longtime listener of the show or a recent listener, you can now support the show on buymeacoffee.com. Links to all platforms are in the show notes. Okay, let's chat. Welcome back to another episode of Speaking Tongues. I am here with Errol. How are you today, Errol?
I'm doing great.
I'm so happy that you are joining me for this conversation. And I like to start each episode with the same question. And that is, what is your first language and which languages have you learned to speak?
So my native language is English, and I've learned to speak Japanese, Spanish, and a little bit of German.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And some very, very limited Nahuatl.
Really?
Yeah, I'm taking an online course in it. Well, I looked at the first module and I've made a promise to myself to look at the other modules in 2022.
So. Okay, you're getting there.
Yeah, baby steps.
What languages did you hear spoken in your home or in your community when you were growing up?
I often heard English, Spanish, and Vietnamese.
Vietnamese.
Yep, Houston, Texas has a large Vietnamese population. In fact, I don't know if you've seen this map before where the U.S. where it shows you which language is commonly spoken in states after Spanish. Mm-hmm. And Vietnamese is one of the big ones in Texas. Yep.
That's in fact, so cool.
I grew up with the, it's different here in Minnesota because the signs here are English, Spanish, Somali, and Hmong. But in Texas, it was always, at least in the part of Houston I grew up in, it was always in English, Spanish, and Vietnamese.
Wow. What kind of signs? Like street signs or?
School signs or, you know, the ones in the restaurants that teach you how to do CPR.
Okay.
Like restaurant safety. Yep. And just like, not like road signs, but there are definitely like parts of Houston where the road signs would be written in Vietnamese. So.
That's so cool. About languages, I want to ask you, so when you were in school, what languages were you exposed to Which ones were compulsory to learn in your school? Which ones were offered to you and your classmates?
So second language education wasn't a focus in elementary, but when I got to middle school, I had to take Spanish in the seventh and eighth grade, right? Middle school is, yeah, 6 to 8. I don't think I had the language my sixth grade year, but I had to take Spanish. And I remember Aguila. That is like the only word that I really remember from Aguila, because it was like, it's El Aguila. I'm like, but it ends with A, so shouldn't it be La Aguila? I'm like, no, because that would be harder to pronounce. I don't know. And her name was Miss Castro. That was our Spanish language teacher. And she was very sweet. And I remember she showed me a picture of her family. And there was a Black man in the photo. And I was like, Miss Castro, there's a Black man in that photo. And she's like, yeah, why not? And I was like, so does he speak Spanish? And then I started wondering, do Black people speak Spanish? Because like I never saw Black people spoke Spanish. I would see, people that didn't have my skin color speaking Spanish. And I was like, Same. Oh, okay, they must be from Mexico or like from, you know, a region in Latin America. And yeah, I mean, Black people don't speak Spanish. They learn it, right? Like they learn it. They don't grow up being native speakers of Spanish. But I'm glad I had that paradigm shift when I met my husband, because when I first saw him, and I wrote about this in my book, I think you remember this part, I was surprised that like he was dark skin but not Black. I was like, you look tan or something. I was like, what? But I know you're not Black, so like, what's the story behind that there?
Right.
Oh, I'm a Moreno. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, and you're a Morena. And I'm like, what's that? I thought I was a negra. Like, what's this word, you know? And learning that and then asking him, like, okay, so you can have African-American. Can you have African-Mexican? He's like, of course you can. Afro-Mexicanos. And I was like, like, mind equals blown, right? Or I remember my sister, she said that she learned Spanish and she speaks it. And she would often be asked if she was from the Dominican Republic or from Nicaragua because of her skin tone. You know, we're twins, so she's Black just like me. But I was like, oh, so is that it? So like, if you're dark skinned, you come from like this region or like this Latin American country or like the Caribbean? So like, what's going on there? And then the more questions I asked, the more I learned, oh, colorism, yay. Like that's, oh my goodness. But getting back to the original point, yeah, so I grew up hearing a lot of Spanish. And I remember my friends, I had friends that were from Mexico, and I used to go to their houses. And oh my gosh, I have one friend, Laura, but her family called her Lada. Her mom was a great cook. She could take like a ball of masa, put some water to it and in it, and just like make a tortilla right out of that. And then she gave me a ball and she's like, now you try. And I was like, I can't do it. I was like, why would you have me do this? And I remember she said, we want you to come to Mexico with us, so you need to get your passport. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was really excited, and I got my passport, and my name is Errol. I thought it was Ariel growing up, but apparently it's Errol. And there was a clerical error, and someone marked my gender as male instead of female. And I had a really hard time getting it changed, because one, I was a minor. I wasn't about to drive all the way to human records department. Like, that would mean I'd have to catch the bus. And Houston, if you don't have a car, like, good luck getting around, right? And
I can imagine.
Right, single mom, you know, if I come to her, mom, the people at the office said I'm a man. Well, you're not, so don't, you're not getting a passport and you're not going to Mexico, leave me alone now. So no, she's sweeter than that, but she was just busy, you know. And it really took a lot of reminding her, hey, by the way, you know, female. I need my records to say this. But we finally got that done. I was just, yeah, my senior year in high school. So I discovered this error in middle school and didn't get it fixed till.
Wow.
So, So I'd never even been out the country until college, when I won my first Japanese speech contest. I was so determined to go to Japan, but I just remember my mom telling me, I'll buy you all the language textbooks you want. I can't buy a plane ticket for you, sweetheart. That's out of my budget. So I remember asking my Japanese teacher. I was really fortunate to get into the language program at that college, and sorry, not college, high school in Bel Air. It's a suburb close to, not too far from Houston. And I remember I asked her, I was like, well, how can I get to Japan? What do I got to do? Is there a language exchange? What does the school offer? And she's like, yeah, you can do an essay contest. You can do a speech contest. Like, so I got to write? Okay, let's do it. All right, let's do it, you know? And I say I was really fortunate to get into the program because even though I was supposed to be studying Spanish in the 7th and 8th grade, I would literally bring my Japanese textbook to class and have it under my desk and peeking at it and learning and stuff. And my teacher would be like, Errol, this is Spanish. Why do you have your Japanese book here? Mm. Because I want to learn Japanese. And she's like, look around you. Are there any Japanese people here? It's like sometimes at the Houston Japanese Festival every year. And she was, you know, people were just telling me you're better off learning Spanish. Like, I'm never going to learn Spanish. All right. And yes, I understand the irony now because I did. Yeah.
How did you get interested in Japanese?
So that started with my mom. She had bought a Japanese phrase book at the nearby thrift store. There's like lots of cheap books there. And she's a big bookworm, and she happened to come across the Japanese phrase book and had it on the shelf. My sister found it one night, and my twin sister, and she goes, you know, I want to learn Japanese. And my mom tells her, it's impossible. You know, don't even bother.
Wow.
And my sister tells her, you know, that's going to make me want to do it even more, right? So now I'm definitely going to learn Japanese. And I was like, well, we're twins. We should have like our own secret language. So let's learn Japanese together. And that's how I got, yeah, that's how I really got started. But I think that the interest came from the music, my brother playing Japanese video games, games that I didn't really know were Japanese because they had been localized into English. I was like, yeah, it was made here in the USA. But then going online and seeing like, wait a minute, there's like the website is like a Japanese version to it. And like, there's like a theme song in Japanese. Wait a minute, where is this game originally from? And just having like, again, my mind getting blown. And then me asking myself, can I ever get to a point where I can understand the music or I can read the characters? Or I can actually play a video game in Japanese. And I was like, I'd like to get to that point. When I was in elementary school and I saw one of my classmates, her name was Leticia, and she was looking at a website in Spanish. And I asked her, can you understand that? And she's like, yeah, I speak English and Spanish. And I was like, no, that doesn't work. You can only speak one language at a time, because that's what I do. I speak one language at a time. So yeah. How come you can do more than one? And she was like, well, I grew up speaking both. Like I speak English. I'm speaking English to you right now, but like I can look at the website and understand it. And I was like, what? I was like, wait, you can understand more than one? How does that even work? Like I was like 12 or 13. But I immediately just felt so jealous. I was like, wait, I want to speak another one. And I want to be able to listen to music in another one. How can I do this? Like, where do I even start? I was like, is it too late? Like, I only speak English at home. And Black vernacular English, right? So I was like, those are the only languages I speak. So, I mean, I've just always been fascinated with how people can amazingly just like, know more than one language in their head and be able to switch, right? I grew up watching kids switching between English with the teachers and then Spanish with their parents, right? Or with some of their friends, and then just be like, what did you say? What are you saying? Are you talking about me? Did you say something?
You know what's funny? What I think is interesting about that and that observation that you had at that age is that, and it sounds like maybe you kind of had this the way that I just realized I grew up like this. I never met anybody who went out of their way to learn another language. Anyone that I ever met when I was growing up who spoke another language, it was because it was part of their heritage and that's what they spoke with their family. So to me, the concept of learning another language was also kind of like, that's not for me. Like, can I even do that? Like, I never saw representation of anybody who like, you know, went out there and got a degree in Spanish or in Japanese or any other language. So like, it makes sense that you would think that way, I think, because had you seen anybody who had, you know, aside from the book that your mom had on the shelf, like, did you see anybody else like put in the effort and the time to like learn this other language.
No, not really think about it. No. Yeah. And the fact that it was compulsory education in school, right, made it seem like this is no different than the English class that you have to take.
Exactly.
So it's like, oh, okay, it's like a school subject, right? But going beyond that, knowing, no, it's not just a school subject. I mean, it's part of your interests. It's part of you know, your desires, your aspirations. It's a part of your lifestyle as well. It's not just something that stops and ends at school.
Exactly. Right?
Even when I would get comments from family members who were telling me, you know, why Japanese? Why not Spanish? Come on, you live in Houston and, you know, Spanish would be a lot more profitable. You could do a lot more with Spanish, you know, bilingual working. And my mom would just be like, no, that's what she wants to study. So let her do it. And that's my baby. So back off. You know, it's like, and I'm going to take her to the bookstore and I'm going to buy her Japanese language books, you know, and I'm going to take her to the Japanese language festival. She drove me to every single one of my Japanese language speech contests. And I mean, she just always showed support. Like, she never told me, you know, there were certain things she was going to tell me no, you know, like I'm not going to pay for your, if you want to go to a Japanese college, I can't pay for that. But, you know, I fully support you going out of your way to learn this language, and you're doing great, Errol, and don't stop. So that was the kind of encouragement I always got from her. Honestly, I don't think she's ever said this, and I'm not even sure if she's thought this, but I believe that maybe she was inspired or moved that a language that she thought was impossible, she's seeing her own child go out of her way to learn it. And she's just like, wow, well, look at that. My baby proved me wrong.
That's well, amazing.
So, I mean, why not? I feel like that's a beautiful thing about not just having children, but just like being proven wrong. It's just like, wow, I didn't know you could do it. And you're doing it. And I want to support you.
At what point did you have any formal Japanese education? When did that come in?
So that started with high school. I got into a magnet language program. So the high school, I wasn't zoned to it because, like I said, it was a suburb really far from where I live. So I had to catch the bus there. School bus, thank God, not the public bus. That would be like three different buses. But
okay, right?
Yeah. And I had to take this exam to get in. I think it was just kind of like testing like your language capabilities or something, that had you like memorize all these fake words and like write them on the next page. It was something like that. But I got in, yeah. And they were like, yeah, you know, pick which language you want to do. And I was like, Japanese. I'm like, Japanese, it's gotta be Japanese. If it's not Japanese, I don't want to do it.
What were the other options?
I think, so they offered Hebrew, Spanish, German, trying to think of another one. Hindi, they all said Hindi.
Wow.
The option I just really wanted was Japanese. And I got actually put on, even though I passed the exam, I was actually put on the wait list, and I was gonna go to another high school called Lamar that offered Japanese. But I don't know if you ever remember doing this in high school when you have to set your schedule and you get this really long paper where you check off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I checked off Japanese, and then one of the coordinators there had told me, oh, we have to let our Japanese teacher go, so we don't have it available. And I looked at my mom and I was like, Mom, she's like, oh, honey, but you're still on the wait list at Bel Air. So and I was like, I don't want to do this. But they called my mom and they're like, hey, congratulations. You know, we saw that Errol was on the list. And so we are ready for him. And I was like, we have space for him. I was like, Mom, why do people think I'm a man? Oh, the twist here was the 2 years that I was taking Japanese, well, self-studying in middle school, my mother took me to the Japanese festival 1 year. They hold it at Herman Park in Houston. I met the Japanese teacher who taught at Bel Air High School, right? And she was like, well, you should take the exam and hopefully you get in and you'll be able to get into the magnet program. And I was like, yay, and I hope you'll be my teacher. And she's like, uh-huh. And so the first day of school, you know, they put me in Japanese level one. I'm like, okay, it's time for me to meet, you know, the teacher from the festival. And I meet her, I'm like, do you remember me, sensei? And she was like, uh-huh. I was like, it's me, the girl from the Japanese festival. And she's like, yeah, I go there every year. And then I said, okay, come here, come here, come here. She had a poster on the wall with all these Japanese phrases. And I said, come here, I'm going to read all these out to you. And I read the whole list and I was like, put me in level 3. And well, no, I didn't say that. I told her, I said, I don't belong in this level. And you know, if you, even if you don't remember me, you about to, or you about to never forget me, because I'm about to rock your world.
I love it.
Yeah. And so she's like, well, yes, we have to give you a placement test right away. And so I took the placement. She's like, yes, yes, you need to be at another level. And we still talk. Like, we're still really good friends. Actually, we complain about our husbands. And so I never imagined doing that with my high school teacher, but
that's so funny.
To answer your question. So yeah, it started from high school. That was when I was taking classes and when I first got introduced to like textbooks, which was new to me, because up to that point I had been like I said, self-studying through like modules on, do you remember Live Mocha? When,
Share Talk
and Live Mocha. Like I was like one of the kids on there, like all the time. I would just be so amazed that I could connect with someone on the other side of the world, like planet, right? One of my bestest friends that I made, her name is Yukako. And I remember I messaged her. I got on the computer at school and I was like, Yukako, are you up? And she was like, I'm about to go to bed. I'm like, but it's 12 o'clock. What the hell? And she was like, no, but like, I live in Japan. We have a time difference. And I was like, huh? What's that? And I was like, so what is daytime over here? It's nighttime over there. She's like, yeah, just about. I mean, there is like it's kind of like a crossover, like a golden hour where it's like, it's reasonable for us both to be up. But for the most part, we do have like a 16, 14 hour difference. So I was like, right. Okay. That just like blew my mind. So it wasn't until I got to, well, I mean, even now, if I overhear the language, which is rare, any instance where I hear, I still get excited because it still does take an effort to hear it every day. As much as I hear Spanish, right? It's like, it's not the same. Like,
yeah.
Spanish, a lot, I'm going to hear it a lot more than I hear Japanese. And if I go a week without, you know, listening to music or watching dramas and stuff, I notice the dive that my proficiency will take, because it's like, uh-oh, you didn't expose yourself enough to the language this week, Errol. Like, come on now, you know, you gotta put more effort into it because you're not living in a country, and you know, right. you don't live with a family member or a friend or roommate who speaks it. So it's like, you gotta put more effort. And I find that it's easier to do that when I combine like my interests with the language, right? But I find that that part is still trial and error, right? Still figuring out, you know, how do I combine what I like to do with what I'd like to learn and what I'm passionate about? And even like a bigger question for me is like, how do I step away from, this isn't an education anymore. Like, this is my life.
Right.
And like the structure I grew up with, like even today when I was practicing Japanese, and I realized that a lot of the characters that I can find, that I realize that I write very easily without much thought, are the characters that I was constantly tested on in high school. You know, some of the characters that have been more advanced, like I don't write them. It was just like, I'm not gonna write it. Like I've got one life here, right? but I really have to make an effort. It's just like, I think it's somewhere between like muscle memory and, again, having this pass fail, or like, you got it right, you got it wrong, that kind of memory with it kind of reminds me, oh yeah, I gotta write it this way, because when I didn't, I got it wrong on that exam and all that stuff, right? But
right. So let me ask you though, because you had this academic experience when you were in Houston, and then you went to Japan, you studied in Japan, right? So what was that like, going from only being in the classroom and having to use this language academically to be, what part of Japan were you in?
Tokyo.
So you were in Tokyo. How was that, like having to communicate, having to get around, having to, you know, navigate on your own?
So in Japanese, I'm what you would call hoko onshi, which literally means no sense of direction. No sense of direction. And despite that, even the very first time I went to Japan, I got lost. I went all the way to Yokohama. I should have been in Saitama. So I was all the way in Yokohama. And I remember I asked someone next to me, I was like, Saitama. And they were like, jikan kakariso. And that just means it's going to take you a minute, sis, to get to where you're trying to get. And when she said that, I was like, I'm going to be on the train all day. And I was like, my very first day in Japan, I was literally on the train all day because I had made it all the way to like Yokohama. Like I should not have been there. I was trying to get to Tokyo and I was literally like on the coast. So
I have to look at a map right now while you're talking.
Yeah. So I made it. Yeah. Cause Yokohama literally means like the port at the side port or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Or Yokohama is like a hill or a port, something like that. Port city, port hill. To be honest, I love getting lost because then I see new things. And I don't know if you listen to that song by Chris Cornell. Doesn't remind me of anything. When you see something completely new and you just have no frame of reference, it just feels like new. And you're just like, I've got this new memory now. And it's wonderful. Like nothing else reminds me of this. It's unique in itself. It's like it's uniquely ugly or it's uniquely beautiful, whatever. Yeah. It's unique and it is what it is, right? And it's wonderful, like sense of what it is. First, on my way back to my host family's house, I would stop by this restaurant every day. And I remember one day they had a server up there, and I don't know if there was a special something going on that day, but I was just like, you know, hey, I would like to have a seat. Told her in Japanese, and she like looked at me, and I hear her go to the back, and she asked the manager, does that woman outside speak Japanese? And I remember thinking, I just spoke it to you. Were we in the same kitchen when that happened? Because I could have sworn I was like right here when I spoke Japanese. But I hear the manager go, yeah, she speaks Japanese. She comes here all the time. And I was like, thank you. You got my back. That's what I'm talking about. That's that motenashi that I was looking for, right? And he comes out and he's like, you come here all the time. I'll sit and eat with you. How are you doing? Where are you from? What did you? I was like, oh, thank you. I was like, you just want me to pay for this. That's but no, it was a very nice, like genuine like experience. But things didn't work out with that host family.
Okay.
And I wanna describe it in the best way possible. My goal when I got to Japan the second time was to party and to have fun. Anything and anybody that was getting in the way of that was not on Team Errol, okay? And my host mom, it wasn't the host family itself because they didn't want anything to do with me, which is like, I maybe they were going through personal stuff because I know I'm awesome, so like, I don't know what's wrong with you. So she wouldn't give me a key to the house. So, you know, if I needed to go somewhere, I had to let her know, like, hey, I'm going to be back in like 10, 20 minutes. And it's like, that's like walking around with like a string attached to yourself, right? Like, who wants that at, you know, at 21? I'm like, I'm here to have fun. And I do not want to be stuck in a house with people who don't want to talk to me. Like, literally, they would just sit around and look at the TV. And I was like, hey, do y'all want to like go out? Like we go to temple, we can do something, but damn, we just sitting here looking at TV. Like I'm only like, I was counting down the days. Like I'm only going to be here for like 100, 200 some days. Like I need to live it. And some of that too, a lot of that, I got to do it now. I got to make the most of it. I think contributed to a lot of the disappointment and a lot of dissatisfaction that I felt. Cause I was like, I'm never going to get this opportunity ever again. But looking back on it, I think it was important to have, well, what happened with the host family, I think was like a fluke, because I think it was me and somebody else that went from a host family to a dorm. But I remember just feeling very frustrated because formal education, so 4 years in high school, and then this was my junior, so like 3 years in college, you know, and 2 years self-study within middle school. That's like nearly like a decade of expectations that,
yeah.
Right? And coming to Japan and just being like, why is it so hard for me to find a friend who wants to hang out with me? You know, everyone is on like these train schedules. Like everything is dictated by like the train schedule. Like, you know, can't hang out. That station is too far from the station I usually used to go home. Or like, you know, this is my schedule. It doesn't match with yours. We can't hang. And I was just like, but I'm awesome. Like, why can't anyone embrace this? And I don't want to be by myself, but I found I was by myself a lot. Like, just like, which if I could be by myself again and be in Japan, I would be so happy. I was like, I don't need to talk to nobody. I just want my okonomiyaki. I just need to chill. And then I'm out. But at the time I was like none of the guys are paying attention to me. I was like, I'm so lonely. Anyway.
So what did you do? Did you finish out the scheduled term you were supposed to stay with this family, or did you go live someplace else?
I went and lived in a dorm in Chiba. So
oh my God. When you came back, and we talked about Spanish in the beginning of the episode, but how did you make that leap from Japanese when you came back? What kind of flipped the switch and got you into Spanish?
Boyfriend.
Okay.
Boyfriend. Because I knew I'd always, the restaurant that I was working at, it was a really nice restaurant too. The people there are really nice. I had taken a trip to, it wasn't Hokkaido, it's Aomori. It's a prefecture literally at the tip right before you have to cross the strait to get to Hokkaido. I wanted to go to Hokkaido, but I couldn't, I was too afraid to do it. I was like, I don't know if I was kind of spending money recklessly, but like not that reckless. I don't know if I can get that far. And while I was there, the restaurant had emailed me. They said, hey, when you get back to the States, do you want to come work for us again? I was like, of course, yeah. And that restaurant, they did speak a lot of Spanish there, because a lot of the people that worked there were from, I think they were from Ecuador somewhere. And then you had a lot of the staff was Spanish speaking. So, but a part of me was like they would even speak Spanish to me, and the people like speak Spanish to each other. And I was just like, I don't really have any attachment. Like my thing when I was working there was, I'm going to Japan and I'm saying Japanese. So I don't need Spanish right now. Everyone just leave me alone. I have my happiness on, like, I was basing my happiness with life on these like if and when statements. Like, I'm not going to be happy until I get to Japan. Like my happiness depends on me physically being in Japan and speaking Japanese. But then when I got there and I realized how unhappy I was, I was like, maybe it's time you reevaluate where your happiness and satisfaction with life truly lies, not just in speaking a language or even being in another country, but being comfortable with yourself and being comfortable with how cultures react to you and treat you, and knowing what your constants and what your values are. So that version of me, I can happily say, I'm learning to let her go, but I'm grateful that that version of me existed, because I needed her dumb ass. So I needed that, because it's just, I think it's so important to go through something like that. And like I said, come out of it knowing that, like, yes, that wasn't the best mindset to have, but it's just like, I know that it's only up from here, right? Like, I can only grow and learn from here. But anyways, going to like why, like the leap came from, like I said, when I first saw Javier as my husband at the time, I didn't know him, but I was like, he is not ugly. I was like, yeah, he's not ugly. Okay, well, I don't care. Cause I remember I'm going back to Japan. Like after I graduate, like I had a shitty experience in Japan, but I still got to go there, because this is like 10 years in the making, right? So like, I can't just throw that all away. But I remember when I wanted to talk to him, because I was bussing tables. I wasn't a server. I was just bussing tables, but I was pretty busy. Like, oh my God. So I'm bringing all these dishes to the back, and there he is, back of house. And I'm like, here are these dishes, and if you could be helpful and get some silverware clean as soon as possible so we can set the table, that'd be great. He would just go, uh-huh. And I was like, how are you doing today? Uh-huh. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, great conversation. This is back and forth. And I remember what happened. I was like, well, he looks really young, so I want to make sure he's at least 21. So like, I'm going to ask him if he's 21. I was like, I don't know how to say 21 in Spanish. And I'm not about to ask someone, because then they're going to be like, do you like him? Do you want to talk to him? Like, I don't need that drama right now. Mm-hmm. So I remember I asked one of my dorm mates, or housemates, where it was like a special dorm I was living in. So I asked her, I was like, how do you say, can you drink in Spanish? She's like, oh, puedes tomar. I was like, uh-huh, okay. And she was like, what's going on? Don't you speak Japanese? And I was like, yeah, no, I'm just going to ask somebody. It's like, if you ask someone if they could drink, like, what's going on here? And I was like, okay, there's like this cute guy at the restaurant I work at. And she's like, oh, is he Latino? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, walk me through this. wait, what's going on? I was like, no, I just want to ask if you can drink. Like, I just want to hang out. I just want to go out for drinks with him. So I go back and I ask him, I said, hey, puedes tomar? And he's like, I was like, okay, so he's older than 21. So that's not going to be creepy if I ask him out. And then later that night, we were closing the restaurant. And, you know, dishwasher always say, not just bag of house, stays later. And I was like, I'm going to go back there. And I'm just going to ask him if he wants to go to the Mall of America. Because that's what people did back then. They went to the Mall of America.
Right? How fun. Oh, my gosh.
It's really like a bus ride away. So, I mean, I was like, yeah, let's go. And I remember I almost didn't do it. I told one of the servers, Lauren, that's her name. I told her, I said, you know what? He doesn't want to go out with me. Whatever. And then she looked at me and she said, Errol, you literally took yourself from 100 to 0. Okay. Get back there. Do it. Just ask him. And I was like, thank you, Lauren. So I go back there and I just say, hey, you know, that I don't know if you have time to go to the Mall of America, if you're ever free. And he was just looking at me and I'm just like going like Mall of America. Do you want to go with me? It would be like two of us. Not a date, but, you know, I'm just like rambling on. And then he hands me his phone, right? And I'm like, oh my God, why is he handing me his phone? And it's like open to Google Translate. And I don't know, in my head, I thought it was going to say, I have a girlfriend, don't talk to me. I don't know why I thought he was going to tell me that. But instead it just said, hi, I'm Javier. I'm from Mexico. I don't speak English. Nice to meet you. And I was like, okay, I can work with this. So I put in Google Translate. I was like, Mall of America, do you want to go? And he was like, my schedule, like, when are you free? And so that's how I learned the days of the week. But I didn't think much of it because we only worked on like Thursdays together or something like that. But I was still studying Japanese. So I still had like homework and stuff to do. And I was actually aiming to retake the Japanese language proficiency exam. The only, you know, if you're not in Japan and you have to take it in the US, you have to go to a Japanese consulate to take it. So there's a consulate in Houston and there's also a consulate in Chicago. Chicago's a lot closer to Minneapolis. Yeah. So I caught the mega bus all the way to Chicago to take it, failed it all over again. But I knew the second time that I failed it, I was like, I can take a hint, right? I can take a sign. It's time for a break. And I just felt that when I met Javier, it was a really convenient push towards why not try Spanish? Why not, you know, rediscover how you feel about that language now that you're kind of rediscovering yourself and how, the kind of relationship you want to have with languages.
How was it different this time?
No structure. It was no structure. And it was all, it really did feel like learning. It felt lovely. There, I'll say that. It felt very lovely. It felt fun. No textbooks. No, you know, I mean, we tried doing a duolingual thing and we were just like, ah, we don't need apps. We've got each other. And all like honeymoon. It was like, it's that honeymoon phase with learning a language where you just love it. And that's the thing. Like, it wasn't, and that's how it's always, I felt like it how Japanese started off with me trying to like personify the language because I didn't have another person to talk to. But with Spanish, I literally associate it with my husband, with Javier. So it's like, well, I like Javier. I like using the language, you know, and when I'm mad at Javier, I like using swear words in the language and things like that. So it really is, I can't look at it formally or like academically. And it just, it's the experience I wish I could have had with Japanese.
As an adult, have you had a formal Spanish like instruction at all?
No.
So you're like strictly just learning on your own and with your husband.
With him. And
that's amazing.
I mean, yes and no, like at the same time, because part of me is like, you see me on Instagram. I get contacted by teachers and they're like, are you looking for a tutor right now? Or are you interested in like taking courses? I'm like, I mean, the answer isn't no, but it may not be the season for that, right? Because of what I'm trying to do with rediscovering Japanese and getting into translation. Because like I said, a lot of my formal education is with Japanese in terms of like languages. So I do feel a lot more comfortable charging people, right, to translate. another thing that I just found really difficult with even going to school in Japan was being able to talk about myself, being able to talk about, you know, when you're from the States, right? You're just like, it's like, oh my God, you're from the US, you know? And it's like, is it just like American Pie? Someone actually asked me that. And I was like, I don't, I can't, you need help. Like, you need real help if you think that. But again, it's like, how do you begin? Like, you need like diversity and inclusion training. You need like history training. You like you need just to like learn how to stop asking stupid questions. But that kind of ignorance is not unique to him. Like, there are a lot of people that hold the U.S. like that, because, well, look at what we're exporting. You know, look at how we are catfishing the world with like, this is what we've got. This is what everything looks like. When it's time to actually break it down and talk about what lies beneath the surface, like what it means to be Black in America. It's hard enough talking about it in English, but many times I felt frustrated in my Japanese class because if the U.S. would come up, or racism, you know, talking about that, I wouldn't know how to articulate it. In English, right? That was hard until I took a class about racism my senior year. And that was probably the best class that I ever took in college, to be completely honest. That and a class on race and ethnicity in Japan. It wasn't that great of a class, but it was like, hey, we're talking about it, right? And there was so much that I didn't know about terms like systemic racism and outlier fallacy, right? Like, just because Oprah is famous and rich and Black doesn't mean that every Black person has the same opportunity and know-how as she does, right? And it's just, it was being able to put words to my own experiences, right? Like redlining, which is something that truly does happen in Houston and everywhere, really, because it's voting laws and segregation. And I can't remember how to describe this exactly, but every day catching the bus from my neighborhood to Bel Air, the suburb, and seeing boarded up stores and you know, people loitering outside of corner stores, seeing it all transform into McMansions and mall strips and shit like that. And it's like, huh, like, this is a different, what is this? What is going on here? Like, I had no words to experience. One book that I read before I went to Japan and one book that I read again after coming back was Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Mm-hmm. And
it's a good one.
Like I said, the version of me before I went to Japan had built up all these expectations and stuff like that. And I think what I was really leaving out of the conversation was race. Or if I was thinking about it, and this is, I say this in that previous mindset, this is definitely not how I feel now. I thought that I knew the language well enough that I could transcend my racial identity. That I was like, my language skills are so good, no one's gonna care about the color of my skin. They're just gonna hear my voice and think, wow, she sounds wonderful. Or wow, she sounds just like me, just like a native speaker. You're accepted, we love you. But then I realized that if you can't get past this, right, then oh boy, then what? Then now what? Now we're just like stuck at this, judging each other by our appearances, mm-hmm. And that's not gonna get us to anywhere but heartbreak. And that was a lot of what I experienced just by going off people's.
Yeah, and it's crazy because why would you think otherwise? Like, why would you not think that because you master the language that your skin color wouldn't matter? Like, you have no reason to think otherwise because your studies in America did not prepare you for the culture. They prepared you to pass a test. You know, when you got to Japan, how would you know to talk about those things if nobody had ever talked to you about them before? Yeah. The more I'm talking to people and I'm realizing like a lot of us did not have a holistic language, you know, experience. Like we knew what to do to get the right grades and get our money's worth for the classes that we took. But, you know, there's times where I think about like, you know, right now I'm studying French again for like the fifth time in my life. Like I'm trying to just get past the A2 and then I'll take it from there. But sometimes I think like if I'm having a conversation, because I'm getting into like the language exchange. So I'm like, okay. And they'll ask me like, how was your weekend? What did you do? And if I did something like really convoluted, I'll make something up and be like, oh, I just did laundry, or I went hang out with my mom. Like, I don't know how to say, like, you know, I went skydiving, or like, I didn't go skydiving, but like,
right. Yeah.
I don't know how to say those things. Or like, you know, if it was like wash day, which we know as Black women, wash day is an event.
Yeah. So
if my conversation partner asks me like, what did you do this weekend? And I don't know how to say I spent 36 hours taking care of my hair, because my hair is curly, or my hair might be brittle if I don't condition it this way, if I don't do that. So like, you know, those are things that I'll just say, oh yeah, I just went food shopping. Like I hung out with my mom or something like that. Just something that won't have me searching for words in that I don't have. So I really love that you brought that up, and I think that it's so important.
Even with the book that I wrote, I tried to find a Black Japanese native speaker, and I could not. So I found Sachi-san, and I felt that I liked a lot of her content. I felt that she spoke about a lot of like social, in a very like socially conscious manner that just really resonated with me. Mm-hmm. She was familiar with talking about inclusive language in Japanese. So I was like, yes, I want to work with you. Help me translate this book, please. I really need your help. And we
still- tell us about the book. Tell us the title.
Yeah.
Tell us what-
Yeah, so the book, it's called Melanin Intro to Languages. It's supposed to be Melanin and Introduction together. I know a lot of people are like, what's it called? I'm seriously considering changing the name and just rebranding the whole thing, because I'm not sure if it caught on. It's the answer to the question, what happens when we include race in the conversation about language learning? What do we get out of that? Or what conversations can we start having? Specifically, I mean, it starts with language learning in general, right? Learning a language like as a Black person. And I can't speak for everyone's experiences, but I definitely can speak about my own and what I have observed and what I experienced as being Black and learning a language. You know, thinking in the beginning, a version of myself thinking that learning a language transcends your racial identity because you're able to speak it and understand it. So, you know, who cares about race? And then being treated differently because you're not white, right? And that hierarchy of, you know, white people and then brown people and then Black people at the freaking bottom, Black women, right? And keeping that in mind, it's like, well, how can we move forward with learning a language in a way that doesn't feel like it's leaving us out? Doesn't feel like we don't matter. And of course we do, right? So, how can you get to the end of a textbook or a page or a chapter and feel like, wow, I feel seen, or I feel heard, or like there's a part of me here that I feel like I'm reading about, and I've learned something new, and I've learned something that feels like just for me. And it also goes back to this idea of exhaustion with trying to educate white people, right? Like that was not the focus of this book. And I got invited to do, actually really happy when I'm talking about this. I got invited to talk about the book with a class, with a group of students. And one of the questions I got was, it was like, I'm really confused about the intention or the aim of the book, because it's talking about vocabulary and then it's giving these really long, difficult example sentences. What's the aim of it, you know? And then it was like, would you ever translate something that's racist? And I was like, oh my God. But I'm actually really happy that I got a question like that, because it's like, one, to go to the translation question, you don't know whether or not something's going to be racist until you read it. And something being defined as racist can unfortunately, and maybe fortunately, be relative, right? Because I'm pretty sure you've seen like some humor and some things that a Black person can laugh at, and a Black person will just be like, oh no, this is awful.
Right, of course, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, but the other part was like, what is the intention of the book? Because it goes all over the place. And since you helped me edit it, which are wonderful editing skills, Elle, I know you remember the conversation we had about exactly what the example sentences would look like. I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, I want you to be able to talk about race. may not be the best kind of conversation to have when you're just meeting a person. So maybe we should start off with some survival phrases, right? And move from there. And then also try and incorporate multilingual parenting. Because I remember when I decided, you know what, I think in addition to Spanish, I want to start speaking Japanese with my baby. And then wondering, well, what the heck do we talk about, right? So, I mean, is race going to come up in every single sentence, in every single conversation? Of course not, right? Mm-hmm. But just because you're not talking about it doesn't mean it's not there.
I think your book was not for somebody who never learned a word of Spanish or a word of Japanese before. And I think it goes back to what we were saying before about you learn all these words, you learn all this vocabulary, and then you want to talk about yourself or you want to talk about issues that are affecting you. That's where your book comes in. Like, your book allows people to respond to, you know, a Japanese person asking about, well, why don't you wash your hair every day? Or, you know, a Spanish speaking person asking about, you know, the racist situation that's going on, you know, in the United States or something like that. And I think that's the value, because I don't know if we need another book that tells you how to say, how to decline estar versus, you know, another, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everyone's got to start somewhere, but I didn't feel like your book was like the beginner manual for that. Your book was filling in a gap. So yeah. for anybody who's listening and wants to find your book and check out your book and or reach out to you at all, because you are a delight to talk to.
Oh, thank you.
Please tell us where we can find you, where we can find your book, and how we can keep in touch.
Yeah, so I'm revamping my website. Don't look at it. Go to my Instagram at Morenita Mommy. Do I have to spell it out?
I will add it into the show notes, but Morenita Mommy is your Instagram.
It's my Instagram. I'm hoping to post more stories about speaking Japanese and Spanish to my son. Because I realized that it's nice to talk about the change, but it's good to embody it as well. Mm-hmm.
How is that going? How is it going with your son is two, right?
Yep,
or he's three. Two. He's two. And your first language is English and your husband speaks Spanish and you have Japanese in there too. How is that? And I know you talk about this a lot on your socials, but what is that like? How is that?
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's surprisingly very like chill. because one, I talked about this on my Instagram too, giving myself grace, right? Last week was very hectic. And I noticed that I do have off weeks where I'm not as attentive to reading with Chris, my son, or speaking to him. But I noticed that, and I always tell people this, it starts in the morning. If I can wake up and tell him good morning in all three languages, I tell him good morning, Ohio, buenos dias. And I'm like, that's a good enough start. And it's usually a lot easier to stay in that mindset. And usually by the afternoon, I fall off. And then like, but by nighttime, I'm like, oh shit, I shouldn't have spoken Japanese to him today. Then I'm like, hey kid, kawaii, yay. Like, there, I did it, check. And sometimes that's good enough. Like, I'm serious, like sometimes that is good enough. I mean, obviously when we get older and when he gets older and I'm thinking about immersion school, there is a Japanese immersion school up here, but to be honest, I am so smart. I am such a badass. Like, I have no doubt that I could teach that boy Japanese. Like, yeah. I honestly, I'm not obsessed with him going to a school. Like, I could teach him everything that I want him to know. And if he's okay with that, then fine. But I know for one thing, I knew that I just can't find like the perfect language partner out there. And that's why I set out to create the perfect language partner. And that's what I intend to do with that baby, to make him feel very open with using different languages with me. I'm not, you know, I don't try to get too much into like speech, like, will he need speech therapy? Will he get this computer? He's like, I'm not worried about it.
For people who are listening, if you are interested in buying Errol's Melon Intro to Languages, I will add the link to that in the show notes, along with her social media information. And she's working on her website, so you'll have to check back later.
Yeah.
See what's up. So, Errol, this has been such a pleasure chatting with you and laughing. And I think that I always enjoy listening to your stories, and you're such an amazing, what's the word I want to use? Like, you're an amazing storyteller, but like, you weave stories so well, I think. So I've really enjoyed having this conversation with you. The last question I like to ask, I like to end every episode with this question. Do you have any jokes, swear words, tongue twisters, cool slang words, idioms, words of wisdom, or words of advice in Japanese or in Spanish to share?
There's another cool Japanese word that I like. It's called tycoon, and it refers to a liege without a lord without imperial heritage. And it's where we get the English word tycoon. So yeah, hey. I know, I blew your mind right now, right?
Whoa.
That's right. Yeah, I think Abraham Lincoln and Napoleon even like used the word in like diplomatic letters back then. So that's what Wikipedia told me. Anyway, and for Spanish, here's a slang one that my husband taught me. It's okay. So you ask someone, are you selling bread? ¿Estás vendiendo pan? And then you say, ¿qué pan? Or like, ¿cuál pan? Or like, ¿what pan? And then like, what bread? And then you like touch their crotch and you say, ¿esta concha? Or like, should you edit this out? Because concha is like the bread, that was, but it's also a slang term for goodie basket.
Yeah. The last thing I want to just ask is, before you go in this situation where we've been talking for such a long time, what is the best way to say goodbye in either Spanish or Japanese?
お疲れ様でした. You would say お疲れ様でした. Because it's been such a beautiful long journey, and I feel like we've both been working hard to maintain the. Wait, no. Here's a really funny Japanese word. So KY. Have you heard of KY before?
KY.
Yeah, it means kuki yomenai, and kuki is like the room, the atmosphere, and yomenai means you can't read it. So someone can be very KY if they're really like socially awkward and they're bad at reading the room.
Errol, I had a great time talking with you, and I will be talking to you soon. Bye.
Bye.